advertised as the first computer-generated TV presenter, known for his biting commentary on a variety of topical issues.
Good job on that CBD.
Thank you.
It really pulled a lot of stuff together. It stripped out a lot of just like confusing kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Did you look at the definitions?
Yeah, I thought it was awesome.
Okay, good. Yeah. I was like,
I'll use that in my
beat
commercial
that
business.
To death.
No, that is like perfect.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah,
I appreciate that.
I mean, you know, because it gets convoluted over a while and it takes a little bit of time to like pull the pieces together that are actually meaningful.
Right.
And when you're referencing it throughout, it is.
Yeah.
And then you have things to look at, like great examples of, you know, just, what was it, beltways, right?
Yeah.
We have great examples of beltways.
We do.
Because they're not just a regular straight line, they're up and down
right.
and stuff.
Could be a lot of different ways to do it, yeah.
So I did do that, by the way. That was the only different day that you wanted.
Yeah. Oh, I guess you can't really sign the main one yet until the Planning Commission approves it. But
okay, well, I already looked at it. I didn't see it.
I'm sure they will.
Do what you do in real estate. You see something there, then you have to invent something. Just cross it out and become the initial list.
What did you say?
Keep
everybody warm.
I said
it's cool in here.
Well, it was 77 degrees in here, so I turned it down. And so we were getting a blast of cold air for a moment.
You know, today's the first day of
the rest of your life?
I'm just saying, it's the first day of summer. The longest day of the year.
Well, let's not make this the longest meeting of the year.
I don't intend on doing that.
Don't even say that.
We have a long day.
We have three public hearings, though.
I know, and I have it down to every single line, straight out of everything we did.
So, thank you for reminding me about telling about those procedures, because I'm like, look it up, and I'm like, it should be on the website, and I looked, and it wasn't there, and then I was like, oh, man. And I'm like, well, I need to get this signed.
So, I got it. This is what I did. I just took today's.
Oh, no.
I just. Total script. I'm just reading straight off of it.
And I'll correct you if you're wrong.
Of course, that's your job.
A great corrector.
So remember, ask for a motion. You don't make motions.
I got it done.
Make sure you get a second.
I got it done. I'm just reading straight off of the script. It's all good.
Discussion. If there's no discussion or discussion done, then bam.
I got this down to a science. I was going to send you a copy because anybody else could use it or I can sell it to you, you know, at some future point.
Lifted straight from Robert's Rules of Order?
It's actually off of Rules of Procedure. So everything that we did over public meetings, right? So what I did was just, like tonight we got three of them, so I'm just going to read it out, introduce him. Literally, I'm just reading off of this tonight.
Open, nice.
Some people, and I have the whole section for our
That's
discussion.
Nice.
Here you go. Nice. Discuss today. Yeah. First, who's second?
Sure.
Bless you. Do a little vote. Next. I'm going to do this all the time. But I might be correct that I'm hearing, but yeah, I think we're good. Hey, Pat. Did anyone call you to say they would not be in attendance, Sean?
Stacy is
okay.
Going to be here today.
She's the only one?
Well, we do technically have a quorum now.
Yeah, but I don't want to start yet. Give a couple other people a chance to get here.
Right.
Must be a place to. So we're just waiting on Silas, and here's Eric. Right on.
Eric.
Yep.
Overload here. Under. Oh, yeah. Drop this down through.
And if you guys want to spread out, we just threw the templates up.
Danielle might
be
taking
over the.
Danielle and I are going to have whiplash. This is, I think, this is the first time I've ever sat down at this end.
I feel like I'm leaning to the right.
Maybe it's because it's quite optional. Okay, I want everybody right in front of me.
Do we wait for Silas, or do we get
rolling?
Are you
moving, Pat, or am I moving?
Do I need to
give him two more minutes?
Oh, you want me over there?
I'm just trying to figure out some place to plug my laptop in so it'll work.
Just unplug that big box.
Well, that's all the computer stuff, so I can't use that.
Oh, well.
I don't need a computer. Yeah, that's okay. I don't think I need one anyway. So.
You got room down here, Daniel?
Oh, I think so.
The Connor people will be over here.
In case anybody's watching.
That's all I need.
Musical
is this water
chairs.
Bottle.
I promise I shower. I promise I shower.
Actually, it's going to come on, so I must have a little bit of charge.
Is that better?
Now we can stare at you guys.
I can hear better now.
Hey, Bill, we'll start in 1 minute.
We're recording now.
Okay.
Might as well start.
Okay. The Planning Commission meeting of 6/21/2020 is now called to order. Can everyone please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
So tonight's roll call. Commissioner Huggins?
Yes.
Commissioner Patizzi here. Commissioner Johnson?
Present.
Commissioner Maddox? Not present so far. Commissioner Freiberger?
Present.
Commissioner Frenette?
Here.
Commissioner Penno? Not present. We have a quorum and we're ready to go. So has everyone had the ability to look at the consent agenda from the May 17, 2022 meeting?
Yes.
Any comments from anyone?
Just a typo.
Which one?
I know you already found it, so do you want to say it? Or you first?
No. To you.
No, I have to find it. That's why I wanted you to do it. Mr. Coleman explained what the City Council is. I can't underline this like paper. There it is.
Were you on two?
Here it is. Number two. Mr. Coleman explained, you see it? Mr. Coleman explained what the City Council is interesting in reviewing. I think it's that interested instead of what interesting. Am I correct?
I think it just should be interested.
Interested. Yeah. That's all I could find.
Anyone else?
No.
Okay. With that, I will make a... Would someone like to... make a motion?
I'll move to approve the minutes of May 17, 2022.
I'll second it.
Okay. Any discussion?
No.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. On not in favor? No. So everyone is in favor. The minutes of May 17th are approved. Okay. Moving on. General public comments. Did we receive anything, mail, emails, inquiries? Okay. So with that, at 6:36, I would like to open the general public comments session of the meeting. Bill, is anyone online that would like to have any input?
I don't see anyone.
Okay. Going once, twice. The general public comments section will now be closed at again, 6:36. So tonight we have three public hearings that have been quite a bit of work in the over the past several months. So with that, public hearing number one, updates to the land use and capitals facility element of the Cedar-Woolley Comprehensive Plan in Title 13, Cedar-Woolley Municipal Code to address state stormwater regulations, file number CPA-3-22. So, Planning Director Coleman, is there any other material or correspondence that should be placed into the record that you've received in the interim?
Just the staff report that is provided on the website, the Planning Commission meeting's website, and was provided to the Planning Commission last Friday.
Awesome. Can you now provide an overview of our June 21st, 2022 public hearing number one?
All right. So this is the capital facilities element and municipal code updates that the Public Works Department has requested to be made to address stormwater control and source control and stormwater permitting updates. This will affect the comp plan, the capital facilities element, the land use element, and a couple of different sections of the municipal code, chapters 1336 and chapters 1340. I gave an overview of this project at the last meeting, which was May 17th of this year, and pointed out that these are just a lot of kind of bookkeeping updates, nothing really major or groundbreaking. David Lee, the city engineer, made these updates based on information that Ecology had given. So the city needs to update our stormwater information based on new Department of Ecology permitting requirements. And so David made these draft amendments, and he was kind enough to put in this memo the description of what each of the updates were. And then, of course, the following 70 pages or so included the handful of changes that are actually proposed. Like I said, these are fairly minor, nothing groundbreaking, nothing controversial. Really just need to update to make sure all the dates are right and be in compliance with the current permitting standards. And that is my presentation. I'm not going to go through all of the changes because they really are little things like scratching out 2014 manual and replacing it with current adopted manual, those kinds of things. So I'll spare the Planning Commission those details and hopefully you had a chance to go through it a second time. And with that, we can open the public hearing.
Okay. For members of the public who wish to speak for or against the proposal, this hearing is to gather information and not answering and questions are not answered at the public meeting. Questions about the proposal shall be addressed to staff during regular City Hall business hours or in writing to City of Cedar-Woolley Planning and Building Department. I will now open the public hearing at 6:40. So if you would please state your name and address or any group or organization you represent for the record. So I will start with the audience, and I see that there is no one in the audience in attendance. With that, Bill, is there anyone online on your side that would like to speak regarding public hearing number one?
There are no public participants online.
Thank you. So I would like to close public hearing number one now at 6:41. Thank you. So with that, the discussion, the Planning Commission discussion will be based upon the memo dated June 21st, 2022, the subject CPA-3-22, Capital Facilities Element and Municipal Code Updates to incorporate a source control and stormwater permitting updates into the Comprehensive Plan 2022 docket. So everything now is open for discussion and debate. Pat, I'll start with you. Is there anything you would like? I'm just going to go down the line.
No, there's nothing I'd like to add or challenge.
Commissioner Johnson.
Nothing to add.
Let's go to Commissioner Frenette. What? I'm just seeing if you have anything to add to this particular portion of the process. That's all I'm doing.
Not yet.
Okay. Commissioner Freiberger.
I don't have anything, no. No comments.
Okay. So at this particular time, would anyone like to make a motion to recommend based upon the staff terminology in the memo dated June 21st?
I'll move to recommend that the City Council adopt the proposed amendments to the Capital Facilities Element, Land Use Element, and Title 13 SWMC.
Is there a second?
Second.
Commissioner Johnson? So is there any further discussion?
No.
Okay. So at this particular time, I would like to take a vote to approve or not approve the above motion. All in favor?
Aye.
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 All opposed? No. The motion passes. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, myself included, 6-0. So we will now move on to
0. That's 5.
That's 5.
Got 1, 2, 3, 4. Oh, I'm sorry, Commissioner, you're absolutely right. I included Commissioner Maddox, and his ghost is here. So that, if we could move on to public hearing number 2, updates to the Parks and Recreation Element of the Cedro Willie Comprehensive Plan and Chapter 15.60 SWMC to address parks, impact fees, file number CPA-4-22. Planning Director Coleman, is there any material or correspondence that shall be placed into the record that we've received in the interim from anyone?
So you've received the June 21st transmittal and report memorandum, and that is the extent of the materials submitted to the Planning Commission on this item. We have not received any public comments or anything like that need to be added to the record.
Can you now provide an overview of our public hearing number 2?
All right. So this one is a little less cut and dry than the last one. So at the May meeting, we talked about the Parks and Rec element and parks impact fee values. I gave an overview of the fact that we haven't updated these fees since 2008, and so the City Council had asked that we update it. And while I was going through the update process, I was also looking at the municipal code and the comp plan to see if there was anything else that needed to be reviewed. If you read the memo carefully, you'll notice some interesting things going on. So first, it hasn't been updated since 2008. It's $1,500 currently. There is a clause, apparently, in the code that says it's supposed to be updated annually per the ENR construction. What is the exact term? Construction cost index. And ENR is the engineering publication that puts out this data annually. So we should have been updating this all along, and what you can see is it just didn't happen because finance department and the engineering department and the planning department weren't all kind of on the same page about these things. So we're kind of kicking around like, so what do we do? Do we just start annually updating by this index, or do we go backwards? And so, has it been 14 years? So do we do updates for the past 14 years and make one big jump? And I provided some other information. So if we were to update it per the ENR, I believe the cost would be an increase to $2,402. There's other ways of doing these annual inflators. One is just the CPI, which is the Consumer Price Index, which we do use for other fees. I forget which one it is that the sewer connection charge methodology. We update that annually based on the CPI. In the Seattle-Tacoma one in specific. Now, I was unable to get the Seattle-Tacoma CPI, but I was able to get the national CPI, which runs a little lower. And if we were to do the inflation from 2008 to now, that inflator would be $2,077. Another way to do this is using just inflation. And so I used a basic inflation calculator that I found on the internet or the World Wide Web or the interwebs or whatever you want to call it, and saw that it would be also quite an increase to $2,036. So what that shows is we should be at $2,000 or higher if we had been updating it annually. I talked with the Public Works Director about the ENR cost inflator, and he prefers the CPI. For various reasons, but we do use the CPI for other city finance things that we increase. So I guess what I'm getting at is, what staff is recommending that we do is we increase the price now to about $2,000 because that's a little bit below what all of these inflators say we should be.
When they adopted 1,500, we had proposed 2,056, I believe. I don't quote me exactly on the odd dollars, but we had recommended that it should be about 2,056 back in, what was it, 2015, you said, or 2007?
Yeah, we reviewed this back in 2015, I think, yeah. 2018 even.
So we're already way behind the eight ball because we had calculated that out then, and so now we're going to be locked into being always behind the ball, it seems to me. But, I mean, I like the system that you've chosen to keep it up to date, but we're already lagging behind what we said we needed way back then, so...
Yeah, let's talk more about this after he gets done.
Yeah, sorry.
We will have the ability to do that.
Yeah, and that's what we're going to do today, is talk about it. So also, another way to look at it is what are the other jurisdictions doing? So I had asked Nicole to go through and find what other jurisdictions charge, and they're kind of all over the place. But you can see I didn't average anything out. Mount Vernon's pretty low. Burlington's super low. And then everybody else is, 1,500, 1,600, 2,200, 2,900, 1,600, 1,900 for a single family. And then Bellingham's an outlier up at 4,000 for a single family. They got other stuff going on. They got a bigger parks program going up. going on in Bellingham, though. So they also have a levy to buy green space. And that levy's been going on for like 30 years. So I don't know exactly how helpful it is to look at what other jurisdictions do, but if we were to go to 2,000 or even 2,500, we wouldn't be like way out of whack with everybody. You know, my general gut feeling is jumping by 1,000 might be a bit scary. But staff is recommending that we update this to change the fee to 2,000 for single family or per unit, commensurately change the ADU fees to say instead of a strict dollar amount to be 61% of a single family rate or 30% of a single family rate, depending on the size of the ADU. We've got large ADUs and small ADUs. If that was the intent in the first place, that's what it should have been. And then change the inflator to be annually by the CPI. This is getting a little complicated, I understand. We're also happen to be changing our fee schedule structure. So we may or may not, we're still looking into how this is going to work, be stripping this out of code, which would be an entirely different process. So we can house the fees in a master fee schedule that is then updated at January 1 every year. And that way we don't miss things like this automatic CPI inflator. So it's in one place with all of our fees that will be reviewed by the finance department every year at January 1 and increased. So the long and short of the story is we have a mechanism now where we're not going to miss this inflator and we will be able to maintain the fee to a level that is better suiting the city's needs. I feel like I was a little scattered shot there. This one got a little squirrely on us at the last minute. But I think it's all here pretty clear. Staff's asking, they're recommending, just let's bring this number up to 2,000 and make it a CPI inflator every year and also change the wording on the ADU fees. That's my presentation. I'm sticking to it.
Thank you. For members of the public who wish to speak for or against the proposal, this meeting is to gather information and are not answered at the public meeting. Questions about the proposal shall be addressed to staff during regular City Hall business hours or in writing to City of Cedar Woolley Planning and Building Department. I will now open public hearing number 2 at 6:54 p.m. And again, so if you would please state your name and address or any group or organization you represent. So with that, I will start with the audience, which is empty, so there is no one here. So, Bill, I will now go to you to see if there's anyone in the online metaverse, I think we're calling it these days, to see if they would like to participate.
There are no public participants in the ether.
Thank you. I will now close public hearing number 2 at 6:55 p.m. So with that, on to our memo dated June 21st, 2022, regarding CPA 4-22 Parks and Recreation Element and Municipal Code Amendments to update the Parks Impact Fee Value 2022 docket. Discussion is now open. Pat, let's start with you. You had some things you were talking about earlier. And the history is very valuable, by the way. I like hearing things like that myself.
Okay. Yeah, so I just wanted to, like I said before, I just wanted to remind that we had proposed $2,000 and I believe $56 or $50 per unit when they adopted the $1,500 per unit, that's what the city council said. They didn't go for the $2,000, they went for $1,500 because we'd been down somewhere like $750 or anyway, that's important. And then the other thing I wanted to say, while I have the mic, is that as the state forces us to or tries to force us to densify through the ADUs and multifamily rules that they're trying to make, these park spaces are going to become more and more valuable. We've got to have parks and programs, and that means having enough land, because these are going to be the only open space that people are going to have, right? When you're packed into an apartment building, park space is all you get. People who are lucky enough to have a home with a yard still have a valuable asset, the actual open space on their property. But for the people who are going to be moving into the starvation blocks and the ADUs where the yards are gone for the ADU, open spaces along our streets and in our parks is going to be all we have for people. So we need to have a more robust park and programs. Park and park programs, and that's going to cost more. We're going to need a larger impact fee. So that's all I wanted to say.
Thank you.
Mr. Johnson.
Can I add a point of clarification there?
Sure.
So parks impact fees can only be used for facilities. So, and I know you knew that, but you mentioned recreation programs. We can't use it for things like that. We can't use it for parks maintenance. It's only for acquiring land for parks, building park infrastructure, putting playgrounds in, that kind of thing. It can't be used for deficiencies. It can only be used for growth reasonably associated or the need for parks reasonably associated with new growth. And that's what our impact fee calculation in the Parks and Rec element is all based on. So it's pretty clear in that, but I just wanted to clarify.
Yeah, thank you.
So, the $2,000 doesn't rattle me at all, increasing it to that amount. I am kind of curious, though, I mean, looking at these numbers, the nice thing is, Ferndale and Linden and Arlington, which are all fairly comparable as far as cities and size and characteristic, are all kind of in that same place. But within the Skagit sandbox itself, we would definitely be an outlier. And given that we're tying this to a very specific standard, is there something similar? Like, is there a reason why Mount Vernon and Burlington and to some degree Anacortes would be drastically lower than where we are? Have they tied theirs to a specific metric, or is it just a number that they've kind of pulled out of their hat?
Well, I'll start with Anacortes. You all probably know better than I do. They've got the Anacortes forest lands that when development happens, people are either have to or are incentivized in such a way that they are cajoled into donating land or money to acquire more land in the Anacortes forest lands. So I think their system is quite complicated, and you throw in the whole Anacortes forest lands scenario, I think things operate very different. So I don't know that we could compare anything that's going on in Anacortes to what's going on here. Plus, it's Fidalgo County over there. They're just different, right?
Exactly.
That's a mitigation banking model.
Yeah.
You got land trusts, you got mitigation banks. That's interesting.
So they do a whole lot of interesting and different things. So they're a tough comparison. I actually was not sure that I should have thrown Anacortes in there, but they did have a nice simple single family amount that you could throw in there. Burlington, I think they subsidize a lot of their city infrastructure with commercial. That's been their tradition. They they built that city hall a few years before we built ours, and plus the new fire complex and all that. They paid cash for a building that is twice as big as ours for a town that's at that time, you know, only 2/3 the size of Cedar Woolley. And, you know, we have a 40-year loan on this building. So, you know, our finances are vastly different than Burlington. And Mount Vernon, that one is a shocker to me. I honestly don't know why theirs is so low. I don't know. Maybe we forgot a 1 or a 2 in front of that number. I haven't looked into that. And Nicole, I don't know if you have anything to add. Yeah, that one's a bit of a head-scratcher.
Because their other impact fees are through the roof in a lot of ways. I know developers that won't even go there anymore because of the fees. Yeah.
So thank you for that. My thoughts on this are pretty simple. I mean, I think 2,000 is a fair number. I think, you know, it's given the historical information. I mean, it sounds like, you know, that's probably where it was supposed to be, but for whatever reason, the council decided that at that moment it wasn't ready for that amount. But I think it's smart that we also update with the ADUs. I think ADUs are not just here to stay, but also going to play a much more predominant role moving forward in the growth of cities and its densities. So the fact that, you know, we're putting in this language to add the reduced rate for ADUs, but still kind of recognizing ADUs, I think is a smart and forward thinking move. So, as recommended, I would support this.
Commissioner Frenette.
Is there a process that has to be done to change from an ENR to a CPI? Because since already written that the
stroke of the pen, we can do whatever we want. We can choose whatever metric we like.
It's not a binding clause in some document somewhere.
Well, it's binding clause in code. I mean, right now it says we're supposed to be doing it by the ENR, and we should have been doing that. And the impact fee would be 2,400 and something. Yeah. But we haven't. We missed, you know, we kind of missed the boat on that one. So now that we're looking at it, we're just recommending the CPI instead of the ENR, because that's something that the finance department uses more regularly, and they're the ones that are going to be doing this. It's really just more of a practical purposes than anything else.
And in your notes here, it says you haven't done anything since 2008.
Yeah, the fee has not been increased since 2008, and I think that might have been the time that Commissioner Huggins was talking about back in 2008, because when we reviewed this in 2011 is when I originally did the brand new parks impact fee calculations. And you know, the number at that time was $10,000 and something per unit was what it would take to get us to where we needed to go. But we saw that as just, you know, you're not going to charge $10,000 a unit. That's just too much. And there's other things that go into it, you know, general fund, and we can we use RCO grants and other various grants to fill the gap. So it wasn't going to be borne 100% by new users. So we artificially lowered that number to 1,500, which is what it had been. And at the time, my recollection at the time was it was 2011. It was not good. We were in a recession.
That was my point, because 2009, I think the price of everything went way down, and
right.
10 and 11. So maybe you were going to raise it, but you couldn't because the price of everything was dropping. Which leads me to my next topic. Will this price go down if there's deflation again? And if there's super inflation, will this go through the roof?
Well, it wasn't deflation per se that kept it at 1,500 in 2011. It was just the council wasn't going to raise impact fees. Yeah. They did lower traffic impact fees and general and this, what we call a general facility charge, which is a sewer charge connection fee at that time. So it wasn't the time to be raising fees.
Right.
Yeah. So we kept it static. And then in 2018, we just did a brush up of it as required by RCO, so we were eligible for RCO grants, and so we didn't like look into, you know, everybody was still comfortable with 1500. There was no great pressure at that time. Things were just starting to ramp up, so we weren't seeing a lot of development pressure. And now, after a couple of years of seeing a lot of development, council's like, well, we should be getting more because we need more parks. Look at all the people that are coming in. And that's what started this conversation is, hey, you know, we're getting all these new residents. We really have the council has a priority to create new park spaces to accommodate them. So we should look at that fee. And lo and behold, we found that we should have been a little higher already. But
You're still in the middle
of things now.
Yeah. Well, I'm all for getting caught up with that. $2,000 seems reasonable, but if it's I don't follow CPI and ENR. Do we need a cap on this in case it goes up 100%, or does it not matter?
It can go. It can reverse. We generally don't. I haven't studied the numbers. I do have the numbers, the year over year ENR numbers, and. It's a table. It's a little mesmerizing, right? I don't see any big drops at any given time. Let's see. Let's look from 2009 to 2012. That's kind of where the recession really took hold. I don't see any drops at that time. But it definitely isn't.
No cost.
Wasn't a lot of inflation at that time either, though.
Have any money?
So deflation.
Kind of like now.
if we used the inflation calculator, straight inflation, then if any deflation was registered, I don't know where those numbers come from. The Bureau of Labor Statistics, how they generate those, I don't know.
I've never seen deflation in my lifetime. Seriously, I mean, never. I mean, things go flat sometimes when there's a recession or something, but it never goes down. It's never gone down.
Well, if you look at the assessor's page, Skagit County assessor's page, and look at history for house prices, uh-huh. A lot of them go way down, like cut in half.
Is that because of the maintenance on the homes and
no,
the condition they're in?
Or just based on price of housing.
Because mine has never gone down. I've always had at least 5 to 15% and sometimes 40 to 60% increases in my property taxes over.
Well, taxes are one thing, but property values can drop tremendously.
And it depends on the jurisdiction, because a lot of jurisdictions now base it upon the market value. Where in the past, I could never figure out why a market value is about 50% higher where the assessed value is. And trust me, over the past 5 years, they've caught on to that game, because a lot of the assessed values I'm seeing are pretty spot on where the market's at. Because you need the higher tax revenue. It's based upon what the value of the home is. Go ahead, John. I'm sorry.
So the price, the property values and home values is only one indicator in inflation, deflation, and all of that. When we went through the Great Recession, it was largely driven by the collapse in property values, which was inflated because of the banking schemes. But the value of the U.S. dollar didn't go down at that time. Just property values went down, and the number of jobs available went down, and from what I recall, I don't remember the U.S. dollar having less value. It may have deflated a little here and there, but not significant. And that's what the inflation-deflation value is. What does the U.S. dollar, how much can you buy with the U.S. dollar today versus, you know, next year or the year before or backwards in time? And so what we've seen since 2008, we've seen a 38-point-something% inflation, which means your dollar buys 38% less than it did in 2008.
Well, if you heard as a general rule, a house doubles in value every 10 years.
Sure.
Have you heard that? It's actually, anybody ever hear that?
Well, being the real estate broker in the office here, so to speak, depends on the location. I've seen different locations actually go down over time.
Mm-hmm.
And what drives real estate values is the cost of borrowed money. So what we've seen just recently is mortgage rates have doubled. Okay, so all of a sudden you're seeing a whole lot of stagnant prices. As a matter of fact, we're watching a lot more reductions come down right now because brokers are still pricing it at, like, money's still at $2.5%, and now we're approaching 7% by September. Mm-hmm. Has a big impact. And now you're seeing a lot more inventory come online, too. So it depends on the location, and it absolutely the Fed controls a lot of that. So we can discuss that until the cows come home.
Well,
yeah.
I just want to make sure we're tying the annual increase to the correct index, that's all. Because I could say it should be 10% per year, or you could say it could follow the CPI. But if everything else is doing that, might as well follow it.
So the consumer price index is nice because that indicates what it what your purchasing power is, what the cost of things are,
mm-hmm.
And so if it costs if the CPI goes up 2.4%, that's because it costs 2.4% more to build the same thing now than it did from the previous year. So what we're looking at is actually building parks, so acquiring land and buying the materials to build it. So that's why it's a nice indicator to tie it to, because it is a real-world indication of, how much purchasing power we have.
I'm on board.
Commissioner Freiberger.
So I assume that the 2000 cutoff is just because since we haven't been updating it every year, we don't want to dump this huge cost increase. I mean, was there any particular logic behind just increasing it by $500 and leaving it at that versus $700?
So $500 increase is, a 25% increase?
Mm-hmm.
So that's a pretty steep increase.
Yeah.
If we have math in front of us that tells us that we could take it to $2,036 if we use just the straight-up inflation number. If we use the CPI, we could take it to 2077. If we use the ENR, we could take it to 2402. That's now, the 2000 is kind of a nice round number to start with. We could, if we want to tie it to something that's a little bit more understandable instead of just, a nice round number, the Planning Commission could recommend increasing it by the CPI, which would bring it up to $2,077, which is pretty close to $2,000. And that gives you the ability to say, you raised it based on something instead of averaging it to what seemed a little bit more reasonable.
I was just thinking for the commissioner, Frenette or Huggins, that was saying that basically we're going to always be behind now because we did not increase it. If we had increased it every year, it would be much higher than it is now.
It would be, if we used the CPI, it would be $2,077.
Oh, Okay.
If we used, what was the ENR number was 2,400, right? And that was what we were using. So
right.
If we were to go and increase the fee by what it would have been if we'd have followed the ENI number, that is a logical way to get to that amount. And then we can say that we're switching to the CPI now, but that all we did was make up what we missed by not doing our annual review of it.
The only thing that makes me uncomfortable about that is it's such a big jump.
So with that, this is my world that I practice as a living, and I prefer tying different costs to the actual assets themselves. The code calls for you can use this money for construction. CPI is incredibly volatile based upon a lot of other factors that have nothing to do with the asset that we're looking to purchase, build, whatever. Starting with the CPI is fine. I'm not opposed to that. But the ENR is a much better indicator of what the costs are going to be for construction for what we're trying to do here. Either one is fine, but if I'm the builder on the other side, how come I'm not tying it to the actual costs that impact me? Why am I throwing something in there that might have an influence of food, energy, even though it kind of all plays into it? The ENR is going to have more components of it dealing with the actual allocation of real estate, right? The allocation of materials. So sometimes they're just as volatile. I mean, I think of the prices of lumber this year, the price of wages. So that's a much better indicator, in my opinion. That's only a number on a spreadsheet. I mean, you can easily plug in a CPI number or an ENR number depending on what your impact fees are going to be. You know, doing CPI straight across the board, okay, yeah. But if you want to be more realistic to what you're actually trying to accomplish, and then, again, at this particular point, this can always be changed at some point in the future, but I believe ENR would be a better indicator of where costs go when we're looking at parks, constructing parks, you know, whether they're, you know, anything we need to build, because those numbers are going to be very different than you might have just walking in a food pavilion. And that's my only 2 cents. Go ahead.
I'm not sure if the ENR figures in property values. It's construction index exclusively, from what I can tell.
I haven't even looked at it. I was like, what's ENR? And usually it's something that...
It's the Engineering News Record. So it's an engineering publication that puts out their own construction cost index used by the building industry. And... The building and construction cost indexes for ENR's individual cities use the same components and weighting those as for the 20 city national indexes. The city indexes use local prices for Portland cement and 2x4 lumber and the national average for structural steel. The city's BCI uses local union wages. Oh, that's builder's code. That's different. That's a different index. So... It looks like it's just tying it to the cost of specific building materials.
Right. Which is just as volatile as what's in the CPI.
Which could be just as volatile.
Yeah,
I mean, with wood prices going berserk.
Yeah.
Side note, I was alerted to an article that slowdown in housing nationally is leading to a drastic drop in wood prices.
That's a fact, by the way. Yeah.
Side note, unrelated. Yeah. I just know you're interested.
Yeah, but believe it or not, it's all related to everything we're trying to do, right? When you're talking about planning, all this stuff is related. Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm not an expert in any of these, but Mark Freiberger is, and he recommended the CPI over the ENR.
I'm fine with any of that.
So, John, do you happen to know we more commonly use CPI as a base for these sorts of things rather than ENR?
We don't.
I mean, I'm familiar with CPI. I hadn't heard of EPR or ENR.
You hadn't heard of ENR?
Yeah.
Right, yeah. No. It's a construction industry
yeah.
thing.
Yeah.
So the engineering department had, I think they used to use the ENR for the traffic impact fees increases, and recently changed that also. And I know that we use the CPI for an annual inflator on the sewer connection fee. I'm not sure if we use that for the utility, monthly utility bill increase, though. That's my recollection from being at many city council meetings when they discuss these things, but I wasn't able to find it in codes stating specifically that's the index that we use. So I don't actually have that information. That was my recollection, but I very well could be wrong.
So let me throw this out there. The CPI changes quarterly. Right now it's highly inflated just due to fuel and a whole bunch of other things.
Yeah.
Right. So let's say it's at X now, and then come January 1st, it's Y, which is maybe 4% lower than it was today. What number do you want? Do you want to pick and choose what the highest was during the year, or do you want to pick and choose what that day is?
It's actually written in here.
Well, it said June to June. Yeah.
Okay.
Updated annually in January based on the previous June to June.
Okay.
Increased or decreased annually effective January 1 of each year by the annual rate of inflation as measured by the Bureau of Labor Statistics Consumer Price Index for all urban consumers, Seattle, Tacoma, Bellevue, June over June.
So let's say, back to your deflation question, let's say it drops to zero, which it never will. We're not looking to say, well, okay, the CPI is now a negative or a negative growth rate or whatever. It stays where it's at. It's only going to go up. If anything, it just baselines it. We're not saying, hey, you know, if you see something like that happen in the numbers, it's going to bring something down.
But it would. The way that it says, increase or decrease. So if the CPI from June to June decreases, then the impact fee would go down.
It's still a bump. If your impact fee right now is, let's say, $2,000, and your June in this year goes up, let's say 8%, then June the following year, it only goes up 2%. Well, you're going to start at that rate of where you were with that 8% bump from the prior year, and now you're just bumping 2% on that new year. Is that correct? You're not bringing it down by a change of 6%.
Well, that's not a change. No. So So June to June, we update it in January.
Right. So it just might not go up as high. But it's never going to go to...
Next year, we use the June to June from the next years. So right. We're not going back 2 years on that.
But we don't start from a base of 2,000 and it adjusts. It goes up that level, then it goes up again and up again, but at a different rate.
Based on the previous year.
Yeah. It never goes.
Yeah.
Right. We're all saying the same thing. Right. Not a base year.
So a question as far as the mechanism of the administration of this. So, you know, looking at the language here of the change, you know, the way I would interpret that is that, you know, we're still somewhat under the same system of potentially not updating it because we don't change any language about who has to approve this because currently we have to recommend it, then council approves it, right? So is that same mechanism still going to happen year in and year out where this will just be on the council's annual calendar or the planning commission's annual calendar?
Council will not have to adopt changes each year. This will just automatically go up by whatever measure, say the CPI.
So why?
And that's an administrative task that we will do. So one, we've learned our lesson, and we know it's there. So we'll make sure it happens.
So why in the past then has it not just been administratively changed? Like why now are we having to? Like I realize that we're doing additional updates beyond that, but why did you not just administratively change that? Because I don't see any difference in the language on the administration of how this gets changed. because it says nothing about having to go through planning commission and council to update this, nor does the update language have any of that either. So my question is, you know, why isn't this just administratively changed currently?
So if your question is, why did it stay 1,500 from 2008 to 2022 without being updated annually as the code says it's supposed to? Is that your question?
In part, yes.
So the answer to that question is it got missed.
So, but was that supposed to be done just by admin, or is this something?
Okay. Yes. So, it was an administrative miss.
Okay. So
I'll own that and say that was the building and planning department. And
I mean, I'm not trying to assign blame to anybody. I'm just trying to figure out the governance mechanism here, because now it's before us. And so, you know, it was an administrative, you know, decision to update it accordingly. And now it's before us. And you know, it sounds like it's at the behest of the council. I'm just trying to figure out why it's before us now then too.
So
like, why didn't you just change it? I mean, I realize we have the ADU and the methodology.
So we only discovered the miss recently, since we started this process. It's because we started this process that we discovered the miss, and we're kind of like, huh, well, we should have been updating it all this time, and we wouldn't have to go through this process, but we're already in this process, and we need to get this fee increased higher. We're unclear legally if we were to just skip the process we're doing right now and try to start increasing it based on this. Do we increase it the amount to what it should be, or do we just start from $1,500 now? And in the, you know, January 1, increase it by whatever the ENR rate was. So we wanted to get closer to the what it should be now. And while we're at it, change it to the CPI, clean it up, update it. Now that we know that there's an error, we'll be sure to make sure that every year annually this gets done. There's, as I was mentioning, we're also going through a process of where the finance department's going to be on top of all of these fees annually and do a process of updating all the fees annually. So it won't just fall on the planning or engineering departments to remember which things in code need to be updated by an annual inflator and change our the fees we bill people. Now there's actually going to be a official sheet put out and maintained by the finance department for all of our fees. So they'll go through a huge process annually to make sure that all of these are included.
And that's not complicated.
We're fixing, you know, we started as a small city, and these things just make it into code as we develop them. And the next thing you know, you've got this kind of unwieldy set of things. It's one thing when you're like, it's death by a thousand cuts, right? You're like, or you're somebody who's nice to everybody, and you're like, you always say yes, and you're like, oh, so you take on this little thing. Next thing you know, your life's overtaken by all these little things that you promise to do for people, and you're like, okay.
Oh, I know.
We got to change.
Yeah, I know.
I think everybody. It was like a bunch of all our heads are.
That's my life in a nutshell.
Nice so guys always.
It
win,
is.
Right?
So So just to clarify. On the back of his question then, so once this is adopted and we're on track and we're using this CPI method to annually automatically adjust the thing, then we don't need to come back and set fees again unless something major changes, either we find out that somehow that we're just simply out of whack again, or we add programs, or I can't do that with programs, I was trying to think of there was another thing anyway. But anyway, the only reason we would come back and lump some change what the fee is if somehow it's out of whack or we've changed the priority of what we're doing somehow.
Correct. Thank you for the clarifying question and examples. You hit the nail on the head. Planning Commission and City Council are not going to have to update this annually. It's just going to administratively be done annually. And administratively, we've created a better system to have the finance department review all of these annually and make sure it gets done. Is that what you were looking for? Now, of course, when we update, we'll probably update the base fee again in 2025, maybe. I'll have to redo the impact fee calculations in 2025 when we get our new population projections, and then we'll determine how much parks we need to accommodate those. And so all the numbers are going to change in our parks impact fee calculations in 2025. But that's a few years down the road. In the meantime, we're just trying to get this ship righted for the next few years.
Anything else? So at this time, regarding CPA-4-22 Parks and Recreation Element and Municipal Code Amendments to update the Parks Impact Fee Value 2022 Docket Memo dated June 21st, 2022, staff has recommended to make a recommendation that the City Council adopt the proposed amendments to Chapter 15.60 SWMC to update the park impact fees and the annual fee increase methodology. Do I have any motions?
I make a recommendation that the City Council adopt the proposed amendments to Chapter 15.60 Siege Valley Municipal Code to update the park impact fees and the annual fee increase methodology.
Do I have a second?
I'll second that.
At this point, is there any further discussion?
Are we changing the fee amount? Because we didn't say an amount. Is my first question for discussion.
I think that it's $2,000. We're bumping it to, and then for small ADUs, $450, and large ADUs, $915, and I believe we're considering any multifamily. Each unit in the multifamily is going to be hit with the $2,000 as well. Is that correct, John?
So, point of clarification. So, what this is recommendation is for $2,000 for single family residences, manufactured homes, units in a duplex, or a multifamily unit. Dependent relative cottages, and then accessory dwelling units would be 30% of a standard single-family park impact fee for ADUs 450 square feet or less. And for ADUs 450 square feet and more, up to the maximum 800 feet, of 61% of a standard single-family residential park impact fee.
Okay.
What about apartment, multifamily units?
Those are 2,000.
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
Okay.
And was that number, the 2,000, was that suggested by the planning department, or was it suggested by City Council, or?
That was just that was a nice round number that the planning department came up with. Okay. If, we had discussed, the 2,000, using the CPI number of 2077,
right?
I believe that, 2077. That gives you, if you say that, you increased it by the CPI since 2008. Gives you a nice matrix, indexed number to reference. Or you could do 2,000. We just threw in 2,000 because it was pretty darn close to that.
Yeah, okay.
And whatever the Planning Commission feels, staff is supportive of either one of those.
Yeah. Well, I'm just trying to recover what we lost over the last 5 years. So I was going to say the 2,400 that the ENI would have brought us to, but I'm happy with it either way. I mean, it's gets us roughly in the right zone, but it'd be nice if we could recover what we lost since 2015. So.
Okay, so I have a motion. I'm sorry. A motion by Commissioner Johnson is a first and a second by Commissioner Freiberger to make a recommendation that the City Council adopt the proposed amendments to Chapter 15.60 SWMC to update the park impact fees and the annual fee increase methodology. All in favor?
Aye.
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 All opposed? Nope. Motion carries 5-0, and it is approved. On to public hearing number 3. Proposed updates to Chapter 3, Additional Standards for the Central Business District, and Chapter 11, Definitions of the Cedar Willy Design Review Standards and Guidelines Manual. Planning Director Coleman, is there any other material or correspondence that shall be placed into the record?
Staff has not received any additional comments.
Thank you. Can you provide an overview of our June 21st, 2022 public hearing number 3?
Do I really have to?
Yes, you do. She worked so hard on this.
Since Nicole did most of this, maybe I should
That'd be wonderful.
Let Nicole do all the talking.
Okay, so as you all know, we've seen this quite a few times. I think this is the 7th draft now. So this is just kind of touching up on the last, the April 19th meeting that we had. There were a few things that were kind of missing pieces that we wanted to put back together. So we had further comments on the roof lines within the CBD. So we specifically wanted details on what the forms would look like in three different sectors. We created three different sectors in the CBD, and those are the historic downtown, the main streets, and the outer CBD, and those are all defined in Chapter 11 now. So those changes were made to kind of specify what the architecture and the design would be. The standards 7, 8, and 9 were the ones that we changed. And then standard number 10 was also created to address roof forms for one-story commercial buildings in the CBD with no residential component. Another change that was made was standard number 1 under the general storefront profile. Instead of asking for brick to be used as the dominant material in all buildings in the CBD, we changed it to now that only applies to buildings within the historic downtown, as well as the main streets. Then we discussed some streetscape lighting. So we decided to go with creating a list of approved lighting fixtures.
I thought that was brilliant, by the way.
Working on that.
I thought that was brilliant, actually.
Yeah. I think that'll give us some space to work with and that, and then the we kept with the 75 feet on center just for buildings that have 25 feet length front
that's
facade.
Like, that's more than 25 feet. That I changed that.
What? Oh, sorry. Yeah, I misspoke. 25 feet.
I changed it to 75.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah, so street lighting is required at 75 feet on center within the historic downtown and along Ferry Street. And then there's a separate, if you have a building with more than 25 feet width of the front facade, that's what you changed. Okay.
Change that to 75 feet also, because 25 feet was pretty small.
Yeah.
Okay.
So if someone's doing a little building that's only 25 feet, that seemed a little low. So since her notes, I missed that. But I changed that to 75 feet because that was more in line with what we were discussing. Like if somebody has a longer building, then they should be responsible for addressing the streetscape. But if they've got a little 25 foot, well, we'll not worry about those.
The continuity wouldn't be there either. It just looked weird.
Right. Okay. And then the last one was cleaning in the Muntins versus Mullions picture and definition.
Hold on to that.
Yeah. So those were all the changes that we went through. So let's go bring it to the first thing that comes up is 7, 8, and 9 in the. Let me find that. Here we go. So it's under the standards for the general storefront profile, 7, 8, and 9. So number 7, I've changed to, let's see, now it says, buildings in the historic downtown area defined in Chapter 11 definitions shall have traditional commercial flat roofs with parapets or use parapets to entirely block alternative roof forms. Flat roofs shall include a parapet on all sides of the building visible from the adjacent streets with a cornice or similar architectural feature. Shed roofs are appropriate for subordinate roof forms such as porches, canopies, or upper floor projections. So that's removing that really lengthy definition of what the historic downtown is. Sure. Kind of plugged that into the definition section instead. So now we've got that sector one here, historic downtown. And then number 8, similarly, buildings over 2 stories or more than 30 feet maximum at peak, whichever is lower, along the main streets of the CBD, defined in Chapter 11 definitions, shall have traditional commercial flat roofs with parapets or may have shed roofs with a minimum of a 3-foot eave on the street-facing side. Flat roofs shall include a parapet on all sides of the building visible from the adjacent streets with a cornice or similar architectural feature. Shed roofs are appropriate for subordinate roof forms, such as porches, canopies, or upper floor projections. And then number 9, buildings of 2 stories or less, or those under 30 feet maximum at peak, whichever is higher, within the outer CBD area, defined in Chapter 11 definitions, may have traditional commercial flat roofs with parapets or shed roofs with a minimum of a 2-foot eave on the street-facing side, or gabled or hipped roofs at 6-12 slope, minimum with a minimum of a 2-foot eave. Flat roofs shall include a parapet on all sides of the building visible from adjacent streets with a cornice or similar architectural feature. Shed roofs are appropriate for subordinate roof forms such as porches, canopies, or upper floor projections. So I think did pretty well to clean that up.
Yeah, very much so, yeah.
More on 10, right?
Yes. So then going on to number 10, this is a new number here, new standard here. So all 1-story commercial buildings with no residential component shall have traditional commercial flat roofs with parapets or may have shed roofs with a minimum of a 2-foot eave on the street-facing side. We'll go on to the next change. I think in the next area is that streetscape lighting to where, let's see. Yeah, so I've added in standard number 1. Decorative streetscape lighting shall be incorporated at 75 feet on center within the historic downtown, again, Chapter 11 definitions, and along Ferry Street. Fixtures shall be selected from the city's list of approved decorative street lighting fixtures. And then here's that number 2 standard where John's changed it to 75 feet instead of the 25 I put in there. New buildings with street frontage of at least 75 feet width anywhere in the CBD zone shall incorporate decorative streetscape lighting. Fixtures shall be selected from the city's list of approved decorative street lighting fixtures. And that brings us to the definition section. So I've added in the... Yes, well, our 3 sectors that I was speaking of before are in there now. So we've got historic downtown, I've defined as the area bordered by the tracks to the west, Puget Street to the east, the former tracks to the north, and Warner Street to the south. And we've got Main Street, which is CBD Sector 2, properties fronting on Metcalf Street, West Ferry Street, and West State Street, the main entryways into the city, excluding the historic downtown as defined in this chapter. Then we've got the outer CBD, CBD Sector 3, all areas within the CBD zone extending beyond the historic downtown and main streets as defined in this chapter. And now we've got Muntins versus Mullians. So I double, triple, and quadruple check this picture. It matches with all the supporting documents that I've found. And I did add a little bit of maybe supporting verbiage in the definitions to kind of clarify.
It made me
that.
Smile. It really did.
I hope that's to everyone's liking. But yeah, that's everything.
So thank you, Nicole. You did an excellent job.
Yeah.
And the outer CBD, the historic district definitions clean it up tremendously. It makes it so much easier. Good job. But if we have to talk about Muntins and Bullions anymore,
I'm going to strike it.
I'm just going to take the photos out and make them go away because I'm not sure that anybody's ever going to care again or use this part.
I've had nightmares.
Muntins.
But now I know them when I see them.
We've gone over this backwards and forwards so many times, I don't think I'm capable of remembering the actual correct way anymore. But thank you, Nicole. I think you did a great job of taking all of these complex issues that the Planning Commission discussed 2 months ago while you were not here and managed to glean from the recordings of this all of the Planning Commission's wishes.
That's the first thing I said to you tonight. You did an excellent job, and thank you. So, at this point, for members of the public who wish to speak for or against the proposal, this hearing is to gather information and are not answered at the public meeting. Questions about the proposal shall be addressed to staff during regular city business hours or in writing to City of Cedar Woolley Planning and Building Department. I will now open the public hearing 3 at 7:47 p.m. So if you would like, please state your name and address or any group or organization you represent. So I will open it up to the audience. There is no one here. So, Bill, is there anyone online that is wishing to make some commentary?
Nicole must have done such a good job.
Right, everybody ran away.
Nobody online to comment.
Okay, so at this point, I will close that portion of the public meeting at 7:48 p.m. And with that, memo dated June 21st, 2022, subject amendments to the design review standards and guidelines to address building modifications in the Central Business District continued. Discuss and debate. I will start to my left, Commissioner Huggins.
I have no comments to add
or sorry.
Complaints to find. It is awesome. Thank you.
It seems like we should be kind of mixing it up.
Oh, yeah, I'm just trying to keep it a little bit more organized because you told me to move it along.
Move it along, good.
Giving everybody the opportunity.
Great job on updating this. Really fantastic. Like it a lot. I do have some questions regarding Muntins and Mullions that I wanted to bring up. I was just trying to get a rise out of John here. No comments outside of that. Well done.
Commissioner Frenette, is the mutton and mullion definitions okay? I have that right here.
Finally.
Okay.
It matches the picture, so thank you very much. I appreciate that. Now, moving on to wainscoting.
Wainscoting.
Forget it. You can call it whatever you want. Next.
Okay, so number one, I forgot you weren't even here. Excellent job. It looks great, and it's so much better cleaned up and putting those three areas in the definitions was great. So that said, I did have a couple of things I just wanted to ask. It looks great as is. I just wanted to clarify a couple of things, and let me get there. So number 7, you know, specifies buildings in the historic downtown area, and says, you know, flat roofs, parapets, or parapets to block alternative roof forms. 10 then doesn't specify it. Presumably, one-story buildings, commercial buildings, could be in the historic area or elsewhere, and it seems somewhat contradictory. So I just wanted to make sure I was reading this correctly.
Could you explain further?
So, so 10 says all one-story commercial buildings with no residential components shall have traditional commercial flat roofs with parapets, or may have shed roofs with a minimum of a 2-foot eave on the street-facing side. So they're saying commercial, let's see, so flat roof or shed roof with a minimum of a 2-foot eave. But number 7 says that it has to use parapets if there's a shed roof to block it. So you couldn't really do both. You couldn't have an eave and a parapet. So I'm just wanting to make sure there's not a conflict there. It's possible I've just misunderstood the intent.
Tricky, but
so let me think. If we change number 10 to say except in the downtown historic core, does that does that clarify it?
Yeah, I just it seemed like you couldn't have both. You can't require parapets on buildings, but then also say that if they're single-story commercial, they can have shed roofs with an eave. So
no, I think that's an important clarification, and thank you for pointing that out. I felt like something was missing, but I couldn't wrap my head around it, and you found it.
Because number 10 doesn't specify where, so presumably right. You could apply it to anywhere, including the historic downtown.
Right.
So yeah, the simplest fix would be to say except in the historic.
So with that, how would you like to change the language to your motion to recommend to include that into the motion?
Well, we haven't had a motion yet.
We haven't had a motion.
I'm just looking at what you recommend. Well, I'm going to need to change, right? Because we're going to get to that point.
Yeah, and if that's the only change, there's still discussion to go. If there's just little things like that, absolutely, yeah. Yeah, we can do that as just, you know, make a motion to accept with that one change or two changes, whatever we eventually settle on. Definitely don't want to have to bring this back again just for a little fix like that.
No. And I only had one other thing, and this one's very minor, and it was down in definitions.
You say mutton.
I will not.
I will personally.
So outer CBD, all areas within the CBD zone extending beyond the historic downtown and main streets as defined in this chapter. All areas works. All other areas might be a little bit more descriptive. Perhaps I'm hair splitting there, but I thought I would mention it. Actually, no, that might not work because we have that other zone, so disregard.
So if it needs clarification, you say all areas within the CBD zone outside the historic downtown and main streets as defined in this chapter.
Well, extending beyond.
Other than.
Does.
Or other than.
Yeah.
Other than.
Historic downtown and Main Street as defined.
I like other than. Replacing extended beyond the. So it would be all areas within the CBD zone other than the historic downtown and main streets as defined in this chapter. I think that's actually a little clearer. And what was the other one?
Number 10.
Except
just clarifying, you want number 10 to say all one-story commercial buildings except those in the historic downtown with no residential component, et cetera, et cetera?
Does that make sense to you? Does that seem reasonable that we don't have a conflict?
I think it does at that point of clarification.
The way I would rate it is
I would just say, except in the historic downtown, comma, all one-story commercial buildings with no residential component shall have traditional commercial flat roofs, et cetera, or...
Yeah, that, or excluding, yeah, yeah.
Or you could say it similarly, all one-story commercial buildings, except those in the historic downtown with no residential. No, I think you get some better. Comma confusion when you do it that way.
Yeah. First place better. Fine.
Yeah.
And then there was one more minor thing that I kind of forgotten about, but every time I've read through this, I've noticed it and decided I would finally say something on page 6 at the first paragraph there. It's in the general storefront profile, but it's on page 6. In the red highlighted area, the third sentence there, tall ground level fronts were very common in early 20th century architecture. To some extent, they have survived to contemporary times, though substantial differences in their materials and presentation. Something's missing there, though there are substantial differences with substantial differences.
Starting where? Tall ground level fronts were very common in the early 20th century architecture. To some extent, they have survived. Am I in the right spot?
Yes, so that sentence, to some extent, something's missing there.
Survived to contemporary times through substantial difference.
Oh, is it through? Okay.
Though, to contemporary times, though substantial difference is in their materials and presentation. Yeah, you're right. Interestingly, that's just something we moved from another portion. It's nothing.
But you also corrected another thing there, too. So, yeah, figured I would mention.
Got a suggestion?
Well, I don't know that through was the intent there. Though there are, or with substantial differences. I'm actually not entirely clear on what that sentence was entirely trying to say.
I think one example is the shake parapet roofs, or not parapets, but the, now I'm going to lose it on the language, the overhangs, you know, that have shingles on them. You know, it's like a shingle awning, and there was something there originally, but not covering the transom window and not in shake form. So it's something that has been altered from the past, but is still within the
I'm going to shut up while I'm ahead.
So then through would be appropriate? Perhaps that's what would...
That doesn't make sense either.
Yeah.
I think maybe if you put through and then added another word.
But it's missing a word. To some extent, they have survived to contemporary times. First
the
of all,
with
comma,
substantial?
Though substantial differences...
With substantial differences in their materials and presentation? Would that work? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Though with... Substantial differences.
Alterations or differences, yeah.
In their materials and presentation. Yeah. We add a with, a comma and a with.
I think that works.
Thanks.
And that is all I had.
At this point, looking at the... memo dated June 21st, amendments to the design review standards and guidelines to address building modifications in the Central Business District continued. Staff is recommended to make a motion to recommend that the City Council approve the proposed amendments to Chapter 3 additional standards for the Central Business District and Chapter 11 definitions of the design standards and guidelines manual. Now, what language would you like to add in? I mean, we just had two or three kind of changes, so I don't know how you want to handle that. And I'm not making a motion.
So
I'm just,
when the motion is made, I would just...
The agreed article changes.
I would just recommend to whoever's making the motion to make the motion and then say with the three minor amendments that we discussed in detail.
Okay. I just need that language, so I have to repeat it. Say that again, with the three...
Minor amendments that we... that. The Planning Commission recommended. Pointed out, whatever.
So at this point, do we have any motions?
So I'll make a motion to recommend that the City Council approve the proposed amendments to Chapter 3 additional standards for the Central Business District and Chapter 11 definitions of the design standards and guidelines manual with the three changes as discussed.
I'll second it.
So we have a motion from Commissioner Freiberger, a second from Commissioner Frenette. Is there any further discussion?
No, I'm happy with what we have.
Okay. Let's have a vote. All in favor, say aye.
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 We have this 5 ayes, 0 nays. The motion carries and is approved. Good job, everybody. On to unfinished business. There isn't any.
Yeah.
New business, none on the agenda. Planning Commission discussion information items, none on the agenda.
It occurred to me that some of the Planning Commissions weren't able to make annotations on there. You mentioned that you can't draw on it. So if you click the upload button, which is a square with the arrow, and then it'll give you the option. You may have to swipe across to, you could upload it to Adobe Acrobat. And then it may take a minute or so for it to upload. But then after you've done that, there are annotation tools you can use on there. There's highlights. You can use highlighters, drawings. You can put text boxes in and type. And I think there's an X up at the top right.
And it was Adobe, Woody?
Adobe. The Adobe symbol, it's the red.
I know Adobe, but what was the program called?
It's just the one that's going to be offered for you there.
Okay.
Yeah, and there should be annotation tools. You may need to go take a peek. It's been a little while since I've done this, but if it doesn't give you a toolbar with like a pen, I think there's like that, a circle with what looks like a pencil tip in it. Click on that. That's your annotation tools.
Oh.
And then you can draw on it, edit. Well, you can't really edit, but you can draw on it, put a text box in there and type notes.
So even in the reader, without uploading it to Adobe, you can click on that pen. I'm just not sure.
I don't think it saves it.
Yeah, how much you can do. Okay. Thank
well,
you.
Well, as long as you upload it to Adobe, you can do it and save it.
That's very helpful.
You don't need a writer on this one.
So this is so we could edit and then send it to you, an edited version of it.
You could edit it and keep it in your files forever. You can send it to us.
Okay.
Have your notes on it for the meeting. It's been a long time since we had a tutorial about that. So if you got any more questions, you know who to ask.
Is there?
It's not me. I don't know.
Everybody's like
somebody else.
I didn't see any 12-year-olds in here.
So is there anything else for the good of the order? Nope. Meeting is adjourned at 8.06 p.m. Thank you, everyone. And Nicole, great job again.
Thanks, Joe.
Do you have to vote on that?
Adjournment? Do you have to vote on adjournment?
I think so.
We do?
Yeah.
I'm sorry.